As I said at the beginning, it was a great privilege and pleasure for me to be here with you at St. John. When John McLaren came to me and said, could I come to a Wednesday program? I thought, oh my goodness, do I have enough Wednesdays left to do that? So when I looked at the calendar, I was pleased that it was only two that I couldn't come to. One was the beginning on the Sunday and the first evening, the first Wednesday evening. But I was able to go to the other one, and I was at the mall until last week. It's a very, very good program. I want to honor you as a parish for having this program. As I said at one of the gatherings, it's part of who you are. It's part of who you are. I've known this parish for all of my ministry within the diocese. I honor and I continue to honor your presence in our diocese, your presence in the provincial church, and your presence nationally, and your presence, very important presence, in the life and work of this city where you find yourselves. So I raise my hands to you and say thank you. Please continue to do what you're doing, because what you're doing in the work of justice and peacemaking and now in the work of reconciliation is very, very important for the diocese, for the church, and for all of us who live in this Greater Victoria and on these islands and inlets. In the world now, in business and in other areas, we hear kind of three kind of problems. People define them as simple problems, complicated problems, and complex problems. Simple, complicated, and complex. Simple problems would be, how do I bake a cake? So I get a recipe, and I follow the recipe, and I bake a cake, God willing. A complicated problem would be, how do we land somebody on the moon? Complicated. We have gravity to fight, we have ships to build, and we have send people off into outer space. But we've done it, and we can do it. A complex problem is a problem with too many moving parts. There is no simple or even complicated answer to it. We have to live with all the ambiguity that is in there. And sometimes as we listen to Scripture, we think, oh, it's all so easy. There's black and there's white. There's good and there's evil. There's the followers of God and all those who don't follow God, as we heard in the Psalm today. But it's not like that, is it? As Solzhenitsyn said, it would be so easy in the world if there were evil people and good people. But that's not the way it is. And that's the complexity of the situation that we find ourselves in the church in which we live today. We are on a journey of reconciliation. And I have said it is a journey. We're not sure what reconciliation looks like, but we are committed to it. And we will discover signs of reconciliation, signs of hope, as we begin with truth-telling. Truth-telling. I am told all the time as Anglicans, but it wasn't us who did it. It was another generation of Anglicans who were part of the government's reconciliation or residential school program. It was them who did it. But sisters and brothers, they are us and we are them. The largest residential school, Anglican residential school in Canada, was in our diocese. 9,000 children in the years it operated, 9,000 children went through that residential school. It was us. And we need to be about truth-telling, and we need to be about this journey of reconciliation. Healing is part of that journey. I don't need healing, I'm fine. Yes, I do. I need healing. We all need healing because we were part of that system. People are not evil. Systems are evil. And there's no doubt in my mind that the Government of Canada's system of residential schools that we were part of as a church and as Anglicans was an evil system. Or people said to me, oh, no, no, it was okay. It was just like English boarding schools, wasn't it? It was just like English boarding schools with a few bad apples in it. No, the reality of the situation was it was an evil system with a number of good people who worked in that system. It was an evil system. The boarding school system in England, the parents had a choice. They also had wealth, they had position, and they chose to send their children off. Children were dragged from First Nations communities and families and taken to residential schools. And the parents were under the law that if they didn't send the children there, they were arrested. So over the journey, over walking together in the program on Wednesday evenings, there's been a lot of ambiguity, complexity, as we've journeyed together through there. From the art of First Nations children in residential schools, the teacher who had them paint and draw, and who himself kept those drawings, we would say, that's good. That's a good person. Encouraging people to be artistic, and children to be artistic. And as we went through, we heard about the law, Canadian law, and First Nations law. And somebody asked the question to me afterwards, which I wish they'd asked on the evening, which was, so what law takes precedence when there's conflict? When there's conflict. I think we see that as we look at the protests against pipelines in Burnaby. We see that the government of Canada still use the same things to stop protests, to stop peaceful process. They use the law and they use the police. There was a deacon of this diocese who had my permission. I've never given a deacon or any clergy of diocese permission to vote, but to be arrested. So please pray for Rob Crosby Shearer when he goes towards court next week and he is faced with a dilemma. He himself is looking at, what do I say? Do I take the line of Mahatma Gandhi who said, yes, I did this, so the law must come down in the full extent of the law upon me? Or do I say something else? So he is in a struggle at the moment, so please pray for him as he goes forward there. So we know and we honor First Nations law and we learn about it, but at the end of the day, our government, and time again, sadly, sadly still uses the police as a way to solve issues. I know that for myself, having been and stood with the Musqueam on the Broughton Archipelago, on the fish farms, 22 fish farms in their traditional territory, and nobody has asked their government for permission to be there. Nobody has asked them for that. And what happens is the RCMP come around, young women who have gone on to the fish farms to protest it, the RCMP come around with guns, and the fishery officers come around armed and visit them. Intimidation. That's where we live, and that's the reality, and we still need that work. Certainly, the government of Canada has offered an apology, but apology is only the first step. Only the first step on a journey, and we have to see our government take action and put into place the work of reconciliation. Recently, I wrote to the Premier and said, you have to do something about the fish farms. You have not asked the First People for permission to have these industries on their territories. I hear your government speaking about reconciliation. Do you want to know what reconciliation looks like? It looks like you honoring their government, honoring the traditional territories. And it looks like you withdrawing the fish farms from those territories because they have no permission to be there. This is a work, I believe, of reconciliation. The other evening we had was the poet and the Indian. I forget his name. Duncan Campbell Scott, thank you, Barbara. There must be a reason for me forgetting his name. Someone whose poetry was outstanding, amazing. One of the professors who was on the movie said that he was so moved by his poetry. Poetry of the Canadian wilderness, poetry of the north, poetry of forests and mountains and lakes and trees, but the sad, sad, sad reality was that wilderness was absent of Indigenous people. He was also the creator of residential schools, a policy of Canada to remove the Indian from the Indian, to send children off to assimilate them into our culture. Complexity. not an evil person, but someone who created an evil system. An amazing poet, but also the person who crafted the residential schools program. And last week, a powerful, powerful experience at the tribal school in Saanich, where a young teacher spoke about her own coming to her own language, her own journey towards learning the language, and now her journey through the University of Victoria to get a teaching degree, a master's, and now back in her own community teaching children the language. Bringing her language to life, she titled it. Bringing our language to life. But we know that that bringing a language to life brings a people to life. And she had an amazing connection between language and depression and ultimately suicide. Language, depression, and suicide. She made that connection. A people need to be speaking their own language. Their own language. Because that defines who they are in their place and in their time on the land. The one thing that stood out for me that I think is the answer for us. Guilt is not the answer for us. That's not going to do anything good for anybody, for us, or First Nations, or for Canada. Guilt immobilizes us. We have to be people of action. And the way we take this action is what she said. I realized as I was learning my own language, I realized as I was teaching the children in my own community, I need to have my mind decolonized. I needed to have my mind decolonized. We came here as a colonial church to these islands and inlets. We came here as a colonial church. That is a journey for us in our own reconciliation, in who we are as Anglicans. We need to decolonize ourselves. We need to decolonize ourselves. And when I did the sacred journey, one of my hopes was to re-enter the land as a church, to re-enter these islands and inlets, this time asking permission and recognizing that the Creator was here before us. Christopher Jurising, who's a professor and a priest in the Church of India, says, when colonials came, they came as if they were carrying God on their back. But the recognition that the Creator was here in the traditions, in the culture, in the language, in the land, the sea, and the sky. It's a journey that we have to be on. That journey of taking that first step of re-entering these territories and learning from First Nations. And I believe that that's what's happened here in the Walk Together program. We listened, we learned. Sarah told a wonderful story of the evening about a lawyer who went to talk to a First Nations chief and sat there and didn't say anything. And after the hour, the chief says, "You're hired." When I have said, when we go and engage First Nations people, we do not go to do, we go to be. When we engage First Nations people in relationships, we do not go to speak, we go to listen. And in listening and being, we will learn and we will be transformed as a church, and we will begin the act of decolonizing ourselves. It's a long journey. It's a long journey. I want to read this from, which has been for me a guiding statement. It's from Stephen Charleston, from a book called The Four Spirit Quests of Jesus. Four Vision Quests of Jesus. In the end, as we walk our sacred journey, a new rhythm will appear in our heart, a drumbeat that will slowly move us to step out and into the circle of life, to be closer to our sisters and brothers, to pass beneath our ancestors. In the land of spirits, until we see the vision God has intended for us and learn our new name as God's people. If you get a chance, watch an amazing TED Talk by Chris Albani. He is Nigerian author, spent time for his work in prison in Nigeria. It's really called Humanity, Discovering Humanity. And close to the end, he tells the story of the Igbo. And he says, the Igbo people used to create their own gods. And they would go and they would speak to the priest and they would say, we have this wish, we have this dream, we have this vision. And the priest would find a sacred place and they would build an altar to this god and they would offer up prayers. But he says, if this god became unruly and asked for human sacrifices, then they would destroy that shrine, they would walk away from that god, and they would not say the name of that god again. Sisters and brothers, we have built a god through colonialism, and that god has become unruly and has had an effect on us and had an effect on the first peoples of these territories to devastating effects. It is time for us to pull down the shrines to that god and stop once and for all saying the name of that god ever again. Amen.